You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of January 30th, 2018, and number 348. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And yes, January, this is actually the fifth show of the month. That's mind-boggling. It's weird. But there are five Mondays, five Tuesdays, and five Wednesdays in the month of January, plus a super blue blood moon eclipse thing going on tomorrow. We're all going to die, I guess. That's what they say. We'll talk about that. Plus, we're going to talk about the hunt is on for cryptids, more proof of ghosts discovered. We'll talk about the space disco or space graffiti, whatever you want to call it. And book of the week. And a major announcement, a very major announcement coming sometime, sometime during the show, probably at the bottom of the hour. I always like saying that, bottom of the hour, top of the hour. It's the top of the hour now, so you got till the bottom of the hour, and we'll talk about that. And this week's news is brought to you by Thomas Francis University. Thomas Francis University is a metaphysics school that offers online spiritually based bachelor's, master's, and PhD doctoral metaphysical degrees, as well as single standalone courses in related metaphysical and esoteric topics. Instructors are easily accessible and offer world-class customer service and instruction. TFU and other ICMH schools have hundreds of students and graduates in more than 50 countries worldwide. For more information on Thomas Francis University, please visit tfuniversity.org. Please. Well, you can do it now, but while you're listening to the show, a lot of stuff coming up for me personally, and well, I guess personally coming up for me. Let's see. Well, like I said, major show announcement, and that kind of revolves around another thing that I'll announce, I guess. I'll talk about it during that. It's kind of the whole reason why there's a major change, so I'll talk about that at the bottom of the hour. Now, the week, I don't know how you start your week. Typically, my week starts on a Saturday. It's kind of how I judge my weeks. Some people start their week on a Monday because you may work a regular, normal type job, Monday through Friday type of thing. But for me, my weekend, my week, I should say, starts on Saturdays. So the week of February 10th is going to be a busy week, leading up to an even busier weekend, the following weekend on Saturday, which is, if you've been paying attention, my convention that I'm putting on, the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference, not a convention. Twinsburg Paranormal Conference will be taking place on February 17th, and that's going to take place in Twinsburg, Ohio, which is pretty much right in between Akron and Cleveland. It's right off of a state route and off of the interstate, so don't worry about the weather. Trust me, we've had a lot of snow. We had heavy snow last night. Had a fun time getting to work this morning at 4 o'clock in the morning. The roads weren't even plowed. Like they sprayed that salty stuff like 12 hours ago. It was horrible, but only took an extra couple minutes to get to work. And I really don't see that being a problem the second week of February. I think we'll be okay. Should be a pretty good window Now, last year, we had a little bit of snow that day, but it wasn't that bad. 2 years ago, I think it was in the 50s that day. And for here in Northeast Ohio, tomorrow, it's going to be in the low 40s. So it didn't even last that long. So don't be afraid. Come on out. It's going to be a fantastic time. I've put together an excellent lineup of speakers. And I'm not just saying that because this is my thing. I'm excited about this just as a spectator. I'm excited to see other people see this lineup and hear these people talk. I don't think they've all been in one room together ever. I know a couple of us have. Ron Murphy, Colin Schneider, myself, we've kind of spoken at a few places together. The biggest one was Kecksburg UFO Festival last summer, all three together. That was a lot of fun. Also, along with Stan Gordon, who is one of the premier, if not the premier, researcher of Western Pennsylvania, if not all of Pennsylvania. And that was a lot of fun. But we're joined with a lot of other people that are really going to round out a very, very good conference. And, you know, I've been trying to speak about somebody every week, but I just get so excited. This is a great lineup of people. Like I mentioned, Colin Schneider, who's the host of Crypto Kid Radio Show every Monday night right here on WCJVradio.com. Audrey Hamilton, who's a very good friend of the show. She's the only person who's ever been a guest on the show. I've had some other people call in over the years, but Audrey Hamilton is the only guest, and she actually brags about that in her bio, which is pretty cool. I think that's cool. She's going to be talking about an event that happened in 1966 at Presque Isle State Park in Erie, Pennsylvania, a mass UFO sighting. And she's done a lot of research into this. I'm really excited to see that presentation. I've talked about Ron Murphy, graduate of the University of Pittsburgh with a degree in literature. He studied medieval history at the graduate level at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. He's into acting. He's an actor. He's a playwright, photographer, and is also a writer. A lot of books in fiction and nonfiction. I got about five of them on my shelf right here. He's also a radio show host, a show called Inside the Goblin Universe. That's heard on Paranormal UK Radio. And yeah, he's on the circuit. He's on the scene. And last week, I know I talked about Aaron Clark. He's the co-director for the Cleveland Ufology Project, one of the oldest UFO research organizations in the world, founded in 1952. And unfortunately, I missed their meeting last week. It's just too much going on. Saturdays are rough, but it's always a good time there. And Brandon Masula, I wanted to mention something. I know this may not sound like a huge deal. I thought it was a really cool thing. Now, Alex Matsuo, she is the director of the Association of Paranormal Study and good friend of mine. I've had the chance of being at a few conferences with her, and she's very, very level-headed, very, very good researcher, and understands the whole entire gamut of what's going on behind the scenes. Now, she wrote a review of Brandon's new book, The Ghost Studies, which I've talked about here on the show. And it's a really good review. It's a fair and honest review. It's not jaded because the two of them know each other and spoke, you know, with at John Sable's convention. I'm trying to remember, that was in November, last November. And this review was actually picked up and shared by the Society for Psychical Research. I thought that was really cool because they don't normally do that with ghost books. But Brandon is a parapsychologist. He's actually studied over in Edinburgh, Scotland, at the Koestler Parapsychology Unit under Dr. Carolyn Watt. So, hey, the guy knows his stuff, and he's actually done some research projects of his own. So he's one of those, man. He's got published work. He knows what he's doing. He knows what he's talking about. And he's going to be at the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference, February 17th. A couple of other ghost people are going to be there. Scott Sukel, who is the former ghost hunt manager and historian at the Ohio State Reformatory. he's been around longer than I have, and we started both pretty much in the same area. We've known a lot of the same people. We just never met each other until, gosh, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 years ago, something like that. He's another very down-to-earth guy. Got a little flaky there for a while when he was at the – I mean, he spent the night, every night at the reformatory. He lived there by himself. So as you can imagine, living in a former prison by yourself, some things are going to happen. And a lot of things did happen mentally for him as well as physically. So he's going to be talking about all that and a lot more at the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference coming up February 17th. He's also a very, 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 very talented photographer. I think a lot of us that are in the paranormal love photography. I know I do as well. I don't think I'm overly talented. I have an eye for detail and an eye for photos, but Scott is very talented. So you're going to want to check these people out. It's going to be, my goodness. Like I said, as a fan, I'm excited to sit and watch this. I'm going to throw a link. This is a Flickr.com link there for Scott Sukel's work. You have to check it out. It's really, really good. And yeah, like I said, I've got a couple of appearances the week prior. I'm going to be on a couple of radio shows and be really, really busy getting everything ready. I'm actually on vacation, so I'll be able to relax and get ready for the conference, make sure all the details are finalized and everything is going to be going as planned. But that week, I'll be appearing on After Hours AM, America's Most Haunted Radio Show with host Joel Sturgis and Eric Olson. That's going to be a late nighter, 10 p.m. Eastern. I think that's on Thursday night. Also, I'll be on Real Ghost Stories Online Podcast's new interview show called The Grave Talks. I don't know what day that's going to be. I was just talking to the host there, gosh, probably 10 minutes before I came on the air. It seems like everybody wants to talk right before I come on the air. I guess that's just the way it is. Yeah. I'm excited about that. I've heard of it, but I've never really listened to that show. So that'll be exciting. I hope they know I'm a little skeptical. Yeah. And speaking of events, I have updated the, well, I don't know when I've last updated the events page on paranewsinsider.com, but as always, check it out. There's a couple I know I need to add. There's one that's burning a hole in my computer, the Midwest Parafest that takes place April 7th, 2018, presented by Airy Shores Paranormal. That's going to be in Toledo, Ohio. Holy Toledo. I got to add that one to the list. It's not on there yet. But anyway, check it out. It's frequently stolen. People hijack that list all the time because it's one of the best ones out there. And I'm fine with that. Just tell people where you got it from. That's all I care for. So point your browser to paranewsinsider.com and check out the events tab at the top. I highly recommend you get out there at least once a year. If you're into the paranormal, whether you're into ghosts, UFOs, cryptozoology, maybe the whole thing, I don't know. Check one of these out. You'll learn something. You'll meet people with similar interests. You might, yeah, I don't know. You might find some answers to some stuff. I don't know. But everyone I go to is very unique, very different. And you're always networking, always meeting great people. So I highly recommend you get out there and to meet these people. But you didn't come here to listen to all that, did you? No, you came for the paranormal news. That's why the show is called The Paranormal News Insider. And we got some news for you. A couple of really interesting stories. I was kind of worried, to be honest with you. I mean, I think it was Sunday night. I was sitting around contemplating, like, you know what? I'm going to have to cancel the show. There's really nothing going on this week. Then all of a sudden, a few stories popped in. And I wanted to talk about this full moon. I figured something was going to happen. And sure enough, as if on cue, a whole bunch of stories popped up on Monday. So we'll talk about that. But first, cryptid news. As always, I always lead off with cryptid news. I don't know why. That's just the way it's always been for over 9 years. And this one is a pretty cool story, I think. It's kind of, you've probably heard of this kind of stuff before, and mostly television shows. I know there was $1 million Bigfoot bounty or something like that. Shows offer a reward for finding Bigfoot. Or I guess I should actually say proof of Bigfoot. Finding Bigfoot's its own show. But how about a video game? Never heard of this before. Something new, a new spin on the whole thing, a video game that wants you to go out and find cryptids. I think that's pretty cool. And this comes from the video game developer Capcom. I'm sure you're familiar with that. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom. A lot of great games have come from Capcom over the years. Now, they've announced a contest for a new game titled Monster Hunter World. It's actually a sequel. And the contest is essentially to find and present evidence of one of 10 predetermined cryptozoological creatures. Now, what are you going to get from all this? Well, you're probably going to get a lot, because if you find something, forget this whole video game thing. You're going to be famous. But it does come with a monetary reward. The prize is £50,000. Well, you might be saying, what? 50,000 pounds of what? Manure? No. Pounds sterling, or British pounds. This is based on, I guess, a lot of these stories were from the UK. So that's roughly just over 70,000 US dollars. That's quite a chunk of change. I don't know if it's going to pay back all of your excursion costs and equipment purchases, if you're so inclined to do so. All your travel expenses going to the deep, darkest places of, I don't know where you're at. Pennsylvania, Ohio, New York, Florida. I don't know where you're at. Anyway, $70,000. That's quite a chunk of change. Buy you some video games. And the interesting tie-in to all this is that Capcom just didn't do this on their own. They reached out to who they felt was an expert in the field. And they reached out to Jonathan Downs. That may sound familiar to you if you've listened to the Crypto Kid radio show. He's a frequent guest on the Crypto Kid radio show, hosted by Colin Schneider, right here on WCJV Digital Broadcasting on Monday nights. Now, Downs is the director for the Center for Fortean Zoology, which is based in the United Kingdom. And he's a very well-accomplished monster hunter in his own right. Now, Downs chose the 10 cryptids that are in this contest, which I thought was kind of interesting. And, you know, they limited it, which was kind of, I don't know, I thought it was a little weird. But it makes sense because they're spread out all over the world. So it's almost giving everyone a fair shake, no matter where you're from. The United States, unfortunately, we only have, well, we might have a couple, but the main one here is Bigfoot, obviously. We also have mermaids, which are pretty much all over the ocean. And for the United Kingdom, the Earth Hound, the Loch Ness Monster, and the Cornish Owl Man. Why did they get three? It's not fair. From Nepal, you have the Yeti, which is the cousin of Bigfoot. I don't know if they're cousins. I'm just saying it's kind of a figure of speech. Don't quote me on that they're related. I don't know if they're related. They're very similar. Let's just put it to you that way. And from Asia, we have the Mongolian Death Worm. Probably one of the coolest names in cryptozoology. Next to this next one, Puerto Rico's Chupacabras. Chupacabras. Probably the funnest one for me to say. And from Africa, the flying snake of Namibia. All right. And from Australia, from down under, we have the Yowie. I was hoping they would put the thylacine in there, but we'll go with the Yowie. It's fair game, because you already have the Yeti and the Bigfoot, so you really can't get too carried away, but why not? Keep it simple. Keep it straightforward. I think it's a pretty darn good list. And like I said, it's pretty much every major continent has something. And it's fair. I'd say it's pretty fair. Except for the UK having three. That's not fair. Anyway, the video game Monster Hunter World launched on Friday, January 26th, and has already shipped 5 million units. So this game is so important to Capcom, it actually jumped their shares of stock almost 9% and is now at their highest level in almost 17 years. So this a lot of stuff riding on this game. There's been a few complaints. Yeah, there always is. Somebody's always complaining down there in mom's basement. But it seems to be a really cool game, and it does deal with the investigation, researching, and collection of cryptozoological-type creatures. Now, Downs, Jonathan Downs, will be analyzing all of this evidence provided. This is the part that I wanted to know. So he's going to be looking at all this and kind of weighing it and analyzing it for quality or whatever. And I guess they're going to determine from all this stuff. So everybody's got a chance. It's not like you have to prove beyond the shadow of a doubt. And if nobody does, nobody gets the prize. It seems to me that the wording, the way this is that somebody will be crowned the champion. Somebody's going to walk away with 50,000 British pounds or 70,000 plus dollars US, as the winner will be announced in July. So if they say the winner will be announced, I would assume that somebody's going to win this thing. So I don't know. I might be getting out there in the woods if I were you, if you're in the United States, and start taking some blurry blobsquatch pictures. Maybe hopefully you get one in focus. Yikes. That contest actually began today. So the clock is ticking. Now, I didn't read any rules. I couldn't find anything actually on the Capcom website itself under their news releases or anything like that. So I couldn't find any rules or any kind of information that would say anything strictly like you couldn't use any evidence or anything you had prior to this date. So you might have a lot of people coming out of the woodwork from years prior that were on other maybe television shows, or they've written books, or they're parading right now around with their so-called proof. But we'll see. Now, the contest runs, like I said, from today through June 30th of this year. All I can say is good luck. I'm going to be going to Mongolia looking for some worms. Not really. Now, if you're in the chat room, I'm going to throw the link there in that chat room so you can check that out. And again, if you're not in the chat room, don't fret. It's okay. I'm not, just going to leave you hanging. I do put all these links through Facebook, which is tied to Twitter for Paranews Insider. It's actually Paranews Insider for the social media, Facebook and Twitter, at Paranews Insider for Twitter. And facebook.com/, you got it, Paranews Insider. So you can get all that information. I do favor those that do show up in the chat room. It's just easy to throw that link out there, and they can look at it as I'm talking about it, or bookmark it for later on and read about it after we're done with the show. And some of these links aren't the exact ones you're going to see when you look up these stories or you go on paranormal blogs or paranormal websites like The Anomalist or who else is out there? Unexplained Mysteries, Mysterious Universe. There's a whole bunch of them out there, but those are really the three biggest ones. So if you go out there, some of these you're going to find the same links, but I do like to throw different stuff that has different things in it. Usually the source is the best place to go because it funnels out the opinions and other information that sometimes gets added along the way. Long story short, listen live. Be in the chat room. But you don't have to be. I get it. We all have stuff going on. You can't always be here. Even if you're listening live, I don't know, maybe you're eating dinner. Maybe you're cooking dinner. Maybe you're skiing in the ski slopes. I don't know where you're at. As long as you're having fun, if you don't get hurt, and you don't fall asleep, I'm cool with it, whatever you're doing. Oh, boy. This next story. Well, got to talk about it. Got to go through it. We're going to move on to ghost news. Not really a great story. I don't know. I'm going to hurt some feelings here, but I have to be honest with you. So I'll try to be gentle, but I'm going to be honest with you. I'm just going to just cut to the point here. I don't know if you've seen this video. There's another, well, there's always a video about somebody finding some sort of ghost. This one's actually on coasttocoastam.com. Not that I want to give them any kind of advertising, but they're the big dogs, I guess. Well, it says on YouTube, too. You'll find it on YouTube. A spooky display of evidence took place in a home in England where a poltergeist is said to have tormented a family years ago. And a location known to many in the area is simply known as 30 East Drive. Yeah, 30 East Drive. That's it. It's pretty cool. It must be famous. It's got to be easy to put on black t-shirts. Now, 30 East Drive is one where many paranormal researchers in the United Kingdom aim to investigate. In a YouTube video now making the rounds, a team is conducting a vigil with a K2 electromagnetic field detector sitting along a wall. And you see another investigator just standing there. And you can hear people talking as well. And just as an investigator asks a question about a REM pod that's also in the scene, the K2 suddenly falls to the floor. Wow. I mean, it's right there for everyone to see. Actual physical proof of direct communication, right? It's right there. No. No, it's not. I'm sorry. It's not. Not exactly. Well, many have said that this movement of the K2 has to be, I mean, it has to be, it can't be a coincidence. There's no way. It happened right when an investigator asked a question. I mean, you can't explain that away. It asked the question, the thing fell. It's got to be a ghost, right? Right? No. No, it doesn't. Yeah. In the 34-second clip, we hear a question asked just a few seconds prior to the one that was asked where the K2 fell over. So one can assume that there was probably a whole series of questions asked. And I'm not a big fan of that. You see a lot of that now with investigators the last few years, the last decade or so, the shotgunning of questions and hoping that something will happen. That's just not random. It's not coincidence. You're just shotgunning questions. You're just shotgunning things. You're just saying things over and over again, hoping that, well, this will happen now. Well, it didn't happen. So maybe it'll happen now. Well, it didn't happen. Well, maybe now. Well, of course, eventually something's going to happen if you keep asking questions over and over. I'm old school. I come from the type of researchers and investigators that we would ask a question and we would wait a little while. Granted, if you waited like 10 minutes, again, that's the same thing. But we wouldn't assume that that's a response to that actual question. We would hope that we would ask a question, get a response a few seconds later, but only asking one question like every 15, 20 minutes, not every 5 or 10 seconds. But even then, coincidence is a factor. So not saying doing that is any better, but this video clearly shows two questions asked within 20 seconds. So of course, something falling off, you really can't relate that to it. Now, when I first saw the K2 leaning up against the wall, I could tell it was already leaning to one side. It's one of those things when you're watching something and you kind of lean with the video because you know something's going to happen or something's going to fall. It was kind of like that. I knew it was going to, it was just a matter of time. It just was just hanging there. There was no way. It didn't really take too much effort. I mean, we're propping it up like that. Come on. Now, again, just prior to it falling over, not only was a question asked, but one of the investigators shifted his weight on the floor and then leaned up against the wall. So, you know, that physical movement on the floor, that could have been enough just to make that thing fall. It just between the questions, that was one thing. But seeing a person moving, come on, that's silly to even think that a ghost was responsible for that, especially with the person moving. That's just silly. Now, some of you might not know what I mean by a K2, or maybe even what an electromagnetic field detector is. Well, an EMF detector or electromagnetic field detector essentially is a meter that detects electronics, man-made electronics, or sometimes natural electronics. But in this case, it's man-made. It's not a ghost detector, despite the branding and labeling. Sometimes you go on these ghost websites where they sell ghost hunting equipment, and they call them ghost detectors. They're not really ghost detectors. They're actually used to find loose wiring, to find bad wiring, to find bad grounding, to find leaking sources of electronics. You can also determine where things are. We used to like to play a little hunt. We would hide things in different places and use the EMF detector to find them. It's a fun game. It's a good training technique for those of you out there. Now, again, many people feel that these devices offer direct measurement of ghosts or are able to detect them. No. No, they don't. No, they don't. Anyway, before I get into that, before I make some people mad and people turn off the show, I just want to let you know that you're tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com, and you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Yeah, K2s. K2 is really when things started to go downhill. People already were relying on tools and technology in the paranormal field. And this really goes back. You can go all the way back to the age of spiritualism when people used divining techniques and tools, Ouija boards, yes, table tipping sessions, table turning sessions, pendulums, all sorts of tactics and techniques and things to fool the senses. But now we're being fooled by technology. To me, it's the same thing. It's just a modern day version, and it's there to attract our attention with the flashy lights and the noises, and people are able to use their cell phones, which makes no sense. You're afraid of bringing a ghost home. You're afraid of using plastic and wood game like a Ouija board, but you're more than willing to use your cell phone to detect ghosts, or thinking you're detecting ghosts with the whole list of all your contacts and your personal information. Come on. Never thought about that, did you? Back to the K2. If you go to the Amazon page for they have quite a few of them on sale, but I was looking at this one in particular for the K2. There are many testimonies to the accuracy, or said accuracy, to the K2 detecting ghosts. Now, Gary says that the, quote, accurate readings are very dependable, and it's the holy grail of ghost hunting equipment, unquote. He said it, not me. That's why I said, quote, and end quote. And one person asked a question, quote, has anyone ever found any ghosts with one of these, unquote? And as you may expect, the answers poured in. Elizabeth F. said, yes, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point, and exclamation point. And her yes is all caps. And I bet she would have made the font even bigger if she could. She would have underlined it if she had the ability, but she didn't. So all we're stuck with is the yes capitalized with 4 exclamation points. An Amazon review titled, quote, we got results last night like you wouldn't believe, unquote. Well, that person says, quote, I finally got around to using this last night. This thing works. Is anyone here with us? And bam, instant response. The reason why? Your friend and I were investigating in a highly active area. You don't know unless you try. If you don't get anything, it's because you might not be in a haunted area. This isn't guaranteed to get you results because it's a K2. Your environment and who or what's in it has to give you the results. This tool is the real deal. Another helpful hint, don't put it near your cell phone, internet router, radio, anything electronic at all. It will give you the wrong impression and spike from that. If it's on its own, avoid those lights flash. Chances are an entity is nearby. We got results last night like you wouldn't believe, unquote. Well, it's quite a testimony there. I mean, always field test your equipment prior to taking it out in the field. Because in the field, you're going to be more subjective with it. You're going to jump to conclusions. But if you know your way around it, you know different things that cause it to spike or react, you have a better chance of understanding that and potentially narrowing that out and saying, well, you know it does that with this, so I'm not going to worry about that. And unfortunately, a lot of people take this equipment, they only use it out in the field. They don't ever test it. So, of course, everything is a ghost. And just because a lighter, the meteor, I should say, lights up, does not mean a ghost is interacting with you. Even if you asked a question, that's really hard to escape the wrath of man-made electronics, especially in a home or an abandoned prison somewhere. Now, Boseric might be onto something with his review that says, quote, immediately rounded up spirits, which I believe to be nothing more than substandard electronic installation in her home. But she believes, and that's good enough for me, unquote. Okay. And Elizabeth C. gave it 5 out of 5 stars with her review titled, quote, as used by professionals on TV, unquote. She said it, not me. Catherine B. only gave the K2 3 out of 5 stars with her review titled, quote, know what these are actually used for, unquote. Uh-oh. Her review says, quote, it's important to know what K2 meters are supposed to be used for. There is no scientific proof that ghosts carry EMF, but this is good to track changes in the environment as well as testing for high EMF, which could result in hallucinations emulating a haunting, unquote. Well, very interesting. And I would say I'd have to agree with you, Catherine. And with EMF detectors, you're pretty much going to get what you pay for. So if you're going to spend $59 for this K2, you're not going to get much. And if you're going to buy these things, you have to know what they're doing and how they're doing it. Now, a K2 is what they call a single-axis meter. It's only going to measure in one plane. So in order to use it correctly, you have to move it around quite a bit. And you have to be careful, too, with anything labeled as a ghost meter or ghost detector, millimeters and all these other equipment. They're not really for essentially what they're actually designed for, which is looking for electronics, looking for leaks, and all these things are actually tuned way up to just randomly go off at will almost. They're like toys, pretty much, and they're for entertainment use only. And they should all be labeled as such. I think it should be spray painted on these things, to be honest. They're not really scientific equipment. Yes, they can be used scientifically, but certainly not in the ghost arena, not in the ghost field whatsoever. Not only that, but these things are really unreliable, and you're unable to calibrate most of these, so you really can't tell if it's working correctly. Even if you're getting readings, how can you verify if you haven't calibrated it? Granted, one must also understand that just because you're in a cemetery and assuming to be away from electricity, that any readings you get will be anomalous or created by a ghost. Now, personally, I've been able to find the source of many random fluctuations just by being patient. And you may get a spike. And again, as you get closer, obviously the lights will light up brighter on the K2, or your readings will get higher if you have a normal EMF detector. And your goal here shouldn't be just to see spikes or to get all fancy schmancy red lights, but to find the source if you can. If you can't find a source over time and you're going around in circles, maybe you got something going on. But I've found the source of many things. One of my favorite ones was a an alarm. And this thing would rotate somehow, some way, this spike, this electromagnetic pulse would come out every couple of seconds. And after a while, I noticed a pattern. It was three different time frames, and it was over and over again. So determined that it was something obviously man-made or something on a computer or something that was a microchip or whatever. Sure enough, it's coming from a store that was closed. It was an alarm. That's all it was. But to the people in the home, they thought it was a ghost. No. Sorry, guys. Hated to ruin their investigation, but that's what I was there for. Now, as far as the K2 is concerned, I don't know. Maybe using it up, setting it up and using it up as a prop up against the wall and waiting for a ghost to knock it over. I mean, maybe that's what it's good for. I don't know, $50, not a bad thing to use for a toy to have a ghost kick around. I don't know. Might be the best method of ghost detection you might actually get from it. I'm not a big fan of K2. I had one. I bought it cheap. I got rid of it quick. It's junk. I don't like it. Still don't like it. You had to jam a penny in there, for crying out loud. How cheap is that? I know. Some people don't like that. They're mad at me now. I get it. I can hear you yelling. That's okay. I'm just here to tell you the truth. No, I've field tested this stuff. I work with EMF detectors. I've worked out in the field. They're not detecting ghosts. They're detecting man-made electronics. That's what they're built for. And to piggyback on this, got the book of the week. This is taking me quite a while to read this thing because a few times, more often than not, I've actually thrown this book up against the wall. Kind of annoying book. And although it's kind of the same stuff that I would write about, still kind of made me mad. I don't know. Before I get too carried away, let me throw the link to that last story in the chat room before I get into my book of the week this week. And there you are. Yes. Why are we still talking about the K2 in 2018? Jim Mallard, very observant question. I don't know. I'm just reporting the news. I think it's silly. I think these would have been gone, long gone by now. I don't know. It's probably the worst EMF detector you can buy for your money. That's just me. Millimeter's not bad, but you got to basically break it to calibrate it. So I don't know. I'm not a big fan. But anyway, book of the week. This is a tough one because this is a skeptical book, and I don't know. A lot of people aren't going to like this one. I know there for a while, I had to kind of read it again because I was, irritated, annoyed, mad, but it's truthful. So that's why I'm talking about it. It's a book well worth it. But I don't think the people that need to read this book are going to read it. That's just my kind of always my stance on these skeptical type of books. I just don't think the people that actually need to read them will ever fork out the money to read these things. But the book book of the week this week is called Scientifical Americans. No, it's not really a word. Scientifical is in a word, but it's kind of to make fun of those of us that investigate the paranormal. Scientifical Americans, The Culture of Amateur Paranormal Researchers by Sharon A. Hill. And Sharon Hill is, she's a Pennsylvania-based former ghost researcher who is now pretty much just a lifelong skeptic. And I don't understand. I get it. You were in the paranormal field. It didn't turn out the way you liked it. Or you realize that there's a lot of silly stuff going on. A lot of us realize that. You became skeptical. And you point out all the problems that's going on in the ghost field. And we're all stupid. We're all ignorant. None of us know about science. I get that. Sure, it's fair. But why do you bother to write a book? It was your master's thesis. You wasted your time on people like us if we're so insignificant and we're doing so many things wrong. Well, I get it. We're getting attention. And it's probably not well deserved. I get that. I agree with that wholeheartedly. And I consider myself skeptical. Not a skeptic, because I don't dismiss everything. and hide behind science like a shield, like Captain America. I'm skeptical because there's a lot of stuff going on that I don't believe in. A lot of techniques, a lot of tools, technology, approaches, belief systems, camera artifacts like orbs. A lot of stuff I don't believe in that I think is absolutely silly and ridiculous. And people are wasting their time believing this stuff. I think it's really, really out there and silly. But I want to believe. I think there's something going on, something that we can't explain, something that science hasn't gotten yet. I do think, I do feel that there are some strange things out there that we have yet to discover. And that's why I continue to do what I do in this field. If I ever became so skeptical that I would write a book that's almost 250 pages long that did nothing but completely bash and completely tear apart the paranormal, I don't think I'd waste my time being a part of it anymore. But now that I've kind of ripped up this book, let me kind of tell you the good things about this. And I guess for me, I'm, like I said, I'm skeptical. So I've already thought about a lot of these things. I've written a lot of blogs. I've written some articles. I've actually done stuff in skeptical magazines. A lot of my books, if you've heard me talk about them, are very balanced minded. From the cryptozoology book, I got a fair review from Benjamin Radford, who's also a known skeptic out there, pretty popular one. It's fair because I try to keep it balanced. That's my approach for all this stuff. But I didn't lean toward one way or the other. And this book here, it pretty much leans towards one direction. But it's necessary. And I think for me, I've been around and I've written a lot of stuff about this stuff. So it's very apparent to me. So none of this stuff is really new. Some of it was presented in new methods, in new means, and some very good points were brought up. But it just seemed to me like just going through everybody's work, cherry picking what served the purpose of writing this book and throwing it up and putting it up against us. But it's fair. It's a very fair book. And even for me, being skeptical, it was, like I said, I wanted to throw it up against the wall a few times. It's just basically a really, really long set of accusations over and over again. But again, it's very fair. And I think it's necessary. I think every paranormal investigator, every cryptozoologist, every UFO researcher needs to sit down and read this book, just the same as Scientific Paranormal Investigation, which I did a long time ago, that was written by Benjamin Radford, another really good book. And he's got another one out about ghosts that I got to get my hands on. I haven't read that yet. But anyway, Scientific Americans, The Culture of Amateur Paranormal Researchers by Sharon A. Hill, book of the week this week. And yeah, it's very frustrating because it points out a lot of bad things that we're doing. But again, it's very fair, very necessary. And I think that if you're starting out, this would be a really good book for people just starting out, or people that are not sure about all this stuff, or maybe you've been in here for a while and you're starting to doubt yourself or doubt certain things. But if you're a true believer and you love orbs, you love orb pictures, you love you know Bigfoot is real because you've seen one, and you're not going to listen to anybody, you probably don't want to read this book because it's just gonna make you mad. You're not going to buy into it. You're not going to believe it. You're not going to get the stuff that's being pointed out here very fairly by Sharon A. Hill. So I don't mean to get mad. Don't mean to bash it. There's actually a couple of really cool things about this book. One thing that I was nervous about, but I agreed to do, appears on page 193. There's a photograph of me delivering a speech at the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure in May of 2016. And I know Sharon Hill, she doesn't pull any punches. She goes right to the gut, which I appreciate. And I like that from her, because you have to be there. You can't just half go into it. But I was a little nervous to have a picture. And good friend Kenny Biddle, who's also pretty skeptical, was taking pictures there. And, you know, I was fine with that. You know, I considered myself to be probably one of the more skeptical people there, skeptical presentation. So I thought it was fair to have that in there. And I didn't know this until I was reading the book, but I was reading this book on this page and I read a quote, and it's talking about just what I was just talking about recently about ghost tech gadgets. And the quote is, quote, "The use of tools in the field has seemingly clouded the minds of those who are attempting to verify anomalous phenomena through them. Many people think that the mere use of tools is science, and having anomalous readings with them serves as evidence of the paranormal," unquote. And I'm like, wait a second. That sounds like something I said once. And sure enough, I looked at the resource, and it was from my website. So I was pretty impressed with that. She does her homework. She's a very good researcher, and all of her sources are there. So this is, again, it's a very fair book, and all the, you know, all the information's there. It's just, sometimes it's hard to stomach when somebody's just attacking you. And for me, I was hoping that there would be some sort of, I don't want to say compromise, but say, at least this is what you're doing wrong, here's what you should be doing kind of thing. That's what a lot of people want. That's what the complaint about Benjamin Radford's book was. But Ben used examples. He used cases he investigated and kind of brought a balance to all that. Where Sharon, like I said, it's a long accusation. It gets really tiring to read, but it's fair, and you have to write stuff like that. So I do appreciate that, and I do think it's very worthwhile. Like I said, the people who are just starting out, people who may not – maybe you're not sure about it. Is all this stuff accurate? Is all this stuff really happening? You might want to pick this book up. And no, don't try not to throw it against the wall. But it's a fair book, like I said, and it's worth the read. Scientific Americans, The Culture of Amateur Paranormal Researchers by Sharon Hay Hill, the book of the week this week. And I do have a couple of other quick stories to talk about here in other news. Last summer, I don't know if you remember this. I remember this. I couldn't find any information about this for a while. Then I finally read about something a couple of weeks ago. Didn't really bother to pass it on because I didn't realize that this was going to happen. Now, I talked last summer about the Mayak satellite, the Russian satellite that was going to be launched. And the satellite would eventually, immediately would become the brightest thing in the sky next to, well, the moon, or I guess you'd say the sun and the moon. Now, the small satellite would use a giant pyramid-shaped solar reflector in order to reflect sunlight from its 370-mile perch above the Earth. This little CubeSat was launched on July 14th, but did not receive the attention it was thought to have had because no one was able to see it. And the reason for that was the solar sail that was going to reflect light failed to open. So yay, rejoice, no contamination in the sky. However, somebody else got the idea. They think it's original, by the way, which is funny because they should know that the Mayak satellite was launched last year. But the space company Rocket Lab recently launched 4 new satellites into space 2 weekends ago from New Zealand. Now, 3 of these satellites were small commercial satellites that will perform tasks such as Earth imaging, weather monitoring, and ship tracking. All fair, all good stuff we need. But the 4th mirrors that of the Mayak satellite. And mirrors is the key word here. The satellite has been named the Humanity Star and serves nothing more than to reflect light back to Earth. That's all it does. It flies around the Earth, spins around, and reflects light back down to us. And it's becoming one of the brightest things in the sky at night. 65 mirrors cover the 3-foot diameter satellite that Rocket Lab CEO and founder Peter Beck says will hopefully inspire goodwill across the planet. Wow, thanks, Peter. So far, astronomers are not happy and have referred to the Humanity Star as an annoying disco ball in the sky, as well as the more popular term space graffiti. Many people are confused when they see satellites, which are more visible in the evenings just after sunset, as well as in the morning just prior to sunrise. These lights in the sky are caused by the reflection of the sun from such a high elevation. Even though it's dark on the surface of Earth, these objects are able to reflect the sun at high elevations. You can't see it. It looks dark, but the light is there. Just nothing to reflect off of it until these little things come, fly across your field of vision. Astronomers are upset by this since it will create unnecessary light pollution and can mess up some software and different things like that. But it's really nothing major. I think a lot of these guys are crying just to be heard, to be honest. But at this small scale, it really and truly, it's not that big of a problem. It's only 3 feet across. It's tiny. And it goes away real fast. Now, the bigger problem, potentially, as many as I've also stated, is that if this continues, larger and larger satellites like this may eventually make its way into space and can ruin our ability to discover things about our universe. The good thing is the Humanity Star will be in orbit for only 9 months, and you can track it yourself if you want to find this thing. You can go to their home website at thehumanitystar.com. Yeah, I'm more than likely sure someone's going to get a video of this and post it as a UFO sighting. You know it's going to come. You know it's going to happen. So thehumanitystar.com, check it out. I watched the satellite for a little while. I haven't been able to see it. They say it won't be over my area for like 3 months. I'm not sure, but I think you'll be able to see it. But it's pretty cloudy here this time of the year in Ohio. And one last story I want to cover real quick here. We should all know, I just mentioned, the brightest thing in the sky is the what? Not the moon, the sun. The next brightest thing, well, the brightest thing at night is the moon. But technically, you're seeing the sun because it's reflection of light. Well, the moon is the subject of some controversy this week. You might have heard about this. And you might know that this month is not only another supermoon. I'm really getting tired of hearing the term supermoon. It seems like it's been like four in a row now, and it was like eight last year. I mean, it's done. Okay, supermoon, let's just hang up that term. It's silly. I mean, all it means is the moon's a little bit closer than normal than during its full phase, as well as it's a blue moon this month, and this is where a full moon appears twice in one calendar month. But on top of all that, you may not have even heard of this. It's also going to be a total lunar eclipse. All of these things happening at the same time. But if that wasn't stunning enough, the Daily Star reports that the, quote, super blue blood moon will cause massive magnitude 7 earthquake this week, unquote. And a guy named Frank Hoogerbeets. Yes, that's not made up. Frank Hoogerbeets. Well, that's the name they gave me, or I should say that's the name they gave him, has issued a warning that between January 30th and February 2nd, there will be a magnitude 6 to a 7 earthquake somewhere on planet Earth. We don't know where, but somewhere. It's going to happen. Now, this warning comes from his knowledge that planetary alignments are thought to cause earthquakes. He states that full moons and supermoons can affect seismic activity, but adding in a planetary alignment is a recipe for a major earthquake. Well, again, Frank does not specify where the earthquake will occur. How convenient. Because one of these large earthquakes happens about once a week anyway. But according to his website, Ditranium.org, there's an even stronger magnitude, 7.8, or maybe two of those, as well as a threat of a magnitude 8 or 9 earthquake predicted for February 21st through March 7th, based on also planetary alignment. It's not getting the press. Not getting the press. And now, back in 2015, astronomer Phil Plate tacked really went after this very same thing on the same guy where he pointed out, quote, because the moon is so close to us, its gravitational pull is 50 times stronger than all the planets in the solar system combined. Remember, too, that the moon orbits the Earth on an ellipse, so it gets closer and farther from us every 2 weeks. The change in its gravity over that time is still more than all the planets combined. Yet we don't see catastrophic earthquakes twice a month, let alone aligning the moon's phases or physical location in its orbit, unquote. That's from 2 years ago. Phil Plate. Now, the moon does have an effect on earthquakes, so it's thought, but an extremely minor one. And even that is disputed. The moon does affect tides, as does the sun. And when the two are aligned, which is during a new and full moon, we do see an increase in tides. Now, in the oceans, I live near Lake Erie. Even on a supermoon, you only see maybe an inch tide. You can't even tell because it's a smaller body of water. So it takes these great bodies of water to be affected at all by a few feet. Now, the sun, even though extremely far away, has a lot more mass than the moon, yet has about half the effect on tides as the moon does. Now, scientists have looked at whether there is a correlation with full or new moons and earthquakes and found very minimal data that relates the two. Now, as far as planetary alignment having an effect, even with every single planet aligned as close to Earth as they could possibly get in their orbit, it would still only have a 2% effect on tides as what the moon does. Very insignificant. You wouldn't barely even be able to measure that, let alone any effect on the plates or plate tectonics or causing earthquakes. Now, Phil Plate published another article this year, and it points again towards Frank Hoogerbeets once again, who is the doomsday prophet from the Netherlands, and explains what Frank is up to. Quote, he is doing what we call in science called anomaly hunting, looking for things that are odd and then trying to see if anything else aligns with them. This is very bad sleuthing. You'll always find some correlation between some events and other things. In this case, quakes and planetary positions. But you might as well look at the fluctuations in the stock market or baseball scores. Without any actual physical reason for the connection, you're spinning just so stories, unquote. And as far as the eclipse is concerned, those of us in the East, on the East Coast, we're only going to see a partial eclipse. And it's really not going to be all that dramatic here. And also, I've been reading about this first blue moon total eclipse in 150 years. And I know that was wrong. So I looked it up, and it's wrong. Now, this is only if you count just the United States. So they had one, I don't remember the year, like 50 years ago somewhere, and you could see it in Europe. So it's not like it's never happened. And I think the next one's going to happen in 2028, which is pretty much right around the corner at this pace. So don't worry. Enjoy the moon. Hopefully you can see the eclipse. And if you want more information about the eclipse and about this super blue moon eclipse, end of the world, catastrophic earthquake causing thing, go to earthsky.org. You'll find a bunch of articles, great articles and scientifically accurate articles about what's going to happen, where it's going to happen, and when you can find the eclipse in the sky where you live. So check it out and enjoy. I mean, it only happens once every, handful of years, just like the eclipse, solar eclipse. These things are fun and they're harmless. If you want to create catastrophic theories and hypotheses and scare people for YouTube monetary purposes, go right ahead. That's what the show is for. to point those things out to you. A lot of good articles about that, though, that disproving all these things that's going on. Love to see scientists get fired up about this stuff. But it's sad that people actually do believe this stuff and are spreading it around. Don't do that. Get your facts straight. Yeah. So that's all I have. And wow, I can't believe it's going to be January in 2 days. So be on the lookout on Friday for Punxsutawney Phil, my good buddy. Maybe he can bring an end to all this snow. I hope he can, because I'm really tired of winter. I want it to be over with. But all you can do is wait till next week. But I missed the announcement. There's a huge announcement. Oh my gosh. So anyway, real quick, 60 seconds. Hear me out. I have a new job at work, new position, going to be transferring to a different location, going to be teaching people in a classroom environment. Very excited about this. This is something I've always wanted to do, teach for my job. So I'm very excited about this, being able to spread education. And right now, currently, I work 5 o'clock in the morning during the week. So I'm up at 4 getting ready to go to work. That's why my show is on so early. You might think, is this guy a toddler? Show's on at 7? He's got a curfew? He's got to be in bed at 8? My goodness. Well, yeah, I have to get up very early in the morning, 4 o'clock, to go to work. But with this new position, we're going to have a later show. So starting February 13th, that's a couple of weeks from now, 2 weeks from now, the show will be on at 8 p.m. 8 p.m. Yeah, I know. You're like, come on. It's not a big announcement. I think it's a great announcement because it's going to allow a lot more listeners to tune in live. I know I'm excited about it. Dita's excited about it. Cindy, my producer, is excited about it. It's been a long time coming. But unfortunately, with the lifestyle I have with work, it just wasn't going to work out. But now we're going to do it. We're going for it. 8 o'clock. So it's going to be 7 o'clock central for y'all out there in the central time zone. I don't think you all talk like that. Maybe a few of you do. But I'm excited. I think it's going to be great for the show, great for the listeners. And I get to stay up later, which I love doing. So be tuned in for that for 2 weeks. Again, February 13th, the show is going to be starting at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. Very excited for that. But for now, next week, yeah, we'll be on at 7 o'clock. Early, I know. But between now and then, make sure you're keeping your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. Above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.